Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talk to Adrian McBride, who is the Executive Director of the Guelph Humane Society. In a sense, 2020 was a good year for pets looking for a home. Places like the Humane Society have been getting a lot of attention from people looking for companionship to get through lonely pandemic times by getting a new pet. At the same time, though, the Humane Society is like a lot of nonprofits and have struggled to find money, struggled without the usual legions of volunteers, and struggled to quickly adapt to a changing cultural landscape. Of course, pets don't know there's a global pandemic and economic downturn, so there's a lot of pressure on the humans in their lives to shepherd them through these difficult times. Helping four-legged friends is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. An article on the CBC website over the holidays said that the pet business grew by 5% in 2020 over the year before. That doesn't sound like a lot, but there isn't usually a lot of movement from one year to the other when it comes to pets and pet supplies, and that 5% represents an extra $300 million for the $5 billion per year pet industry. More than one in three Canadian homes now has a dog, and two out of every five homes now has a cat. And then there are all the birds, hamsters, guinea pigs, lizards, and goldfish, who are just as beloved by their humans as any cat or dog. The reason for this shift is COVID-19. More people are spending more time at home, and not only were they looking for company, they had more time to dedicate to their pet. So it's a good news story, right? Well, not quite. There have been instances in our area of people falling victim to scams. They buy a puppy online, but no actual puppy ever arrives as some con man walks away with your wire transfer. That's one of the reasons why people put their trust in the Humane Society, an organization with a 125-year history of, in their words, protecting and caring for the many animals with whom we share our community and our lives. Still, there have been uphill challenges for the Humane Society, who were supposed to have moved into their new and more spacious home in the Hanlon Creek Business Park by now. From pet care, to hosting potential new pet owners, to taking pets to get needed care at the veterinarian, there's a lot of work at the Humane Society that doesn't stop because of a global pandemic. So how are they coping? This week we're joined by Adrian McBride, who will take us inside the Humane Society to talk about the issues they are dealing with, the effects of the pandemic on both people and animals, and how they've adapted the adoption process because of COVID. We will also talk about the pandemic impact on fundraising, especially in the case of building the Humane Society's new headquarters, which is behind schedule and still $2.3 million short of its fundraising goal. And finally, we discuss whether the pets are aware of how things have changed, what the post-pandemic world will look like for animals adopted at its height, and what kind of help the Humane Society needs now from volunteers and supporters. So I caught up with Adrian McBride last week via Zoom. So Adrian McBride, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Excited to be here. We're glad to have you. By we, I mean me. But to start with, perhaps you can just answer sort of a general thing that occurred to me as I was preparing for this interview. The term forever home, when did that become popularly used in sort of your business as the head of the board of the Guelph Humane Society? Because it was like, it's one of those things that was like, one day I had never heard it before, and then the next day it was all I heard when people were talking about adopting pets forever home. How long has that been a thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know for sure. And interestingly enough, the Guelph Humane Society actually doesn't use the term forever home. We use a happy tail, and we spell tail like a, you know, imagine a wagging tail. That's how we spell it. Because a forever home, we find is sort of this really idealistic standard to hold people to, because life happens and there's, no, forever home isn't always possible. And that's why lots of pets end up in at the Humane Society is because a forever home wasn't possible for them. And so we like to use a happy tail because it takes some of that pressure off providing a forever home. If in fact, you know, sometimes animals develop behavior problems that are difficult to manage in a home or can be dangerous in a particular home, or medical problems that are too onerous for an individual to take on themselves, or sometimes just life happens. You know, you get a really great job opportunity that takes you overseas. And as much as you want to take your pet with you, it's sometimes international rules don't allow you to do that. And finding a new home for your pet is sometimes the best thing to do. And we can all say, oh, I would never take the job, but maybe you would if it was a great opportunity and you knew that another organization could find a great home for your pet. So Forever Home, it's almost this idealistic standard that it's ideal. It's what we want for all pets, that they get adopted and they spend, you know, 20 years in one home living with a wonderful family. And we hear lots of feedback from our community that that's what happens. But instead, we choose to use the term a happy tale so that it just sort of reflects the reality of everyone's lives.
That is such an interesting answer to the question I was not expecting, because I thought it was going to be like a warm-up question, but now there's like facets to it too, because you're right. Forever Home is a lot of pressure on a person.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, you know, cause I'm a bitter and cynical old man, I was just like, oh, I think it's too cutesy, but there's,
it is very, yeah. You do find that in animal welfare, there's a lot of, you know, there's a perfect feline and a Forever Home, and there's lots of those little things that people come up with in animal welfare, and Happy Tale, I guess, is one of them. We're just as guilty, but.
All right. Well, you're self-aware about it, which is helpful. I do want to get serious though, because I mean, there's a lot of serious stuff with the pandemic, which is ongoing. We know it's going to be going on for several months still, even as vaccines are going out. But for your particular organization, how has COVID and the pandemic like affected the Guelph Humane Society in a way that maybe wouldn't affect other nonprofits, or even just, you know, ways people wouldn't expect it to affect the way you do business, so to speak?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, one of the things that was kind of a nail biter at the beginning of the pandemic was whether or not our work would be considered essential. And so whether animal welfare and, you know, sheltering animals and providing those type of services to the community, we were very fortunate that we were deemed an essential service. And so that meant that we could continue doing the work that we were doing, because we knew that if, you know, anything from someone being hospitalized for COVID, they might need emergency care for their pets, to the, we didn't know at the beginning of the pandemic, the long-term economic impact. So if people were facing eviction or job loss, that sometimes results in the inability to continue caring for a pet because of financial reasons. And so we really wanted to be able to continuing as an essential service. And then we prepared for a lot of those things to happen. And then this completely sort of predictable thing happened, and everybody wanted a pet while they were home, which was really exciting. And I think it really shows the importance of, you know, the bond that people feel with a pet when you're at home. You want a pet with you to fill your house with, you know, love and fun and all the things that pets offer. And so we originally had suspended our adoption because we weren't sure how that really fit into, you know, stay-at-home orders and things like that, if people were coming out. But what we found was we had pets in our care that needed homes, and we had an incredible demand for people hoping to adopt pets. And you've heard the term, I'm sure, pandemic puppy and pandemic pets, and it's becoming really, there is a more demand than there is pets available for adoption for us and for most organizations, including dog breeders and cat breeders as well. They're finding they don't have puppies for the demand that people are interested in purchasing. So we reopened our adoptions, and that's been an area where we've really you know, put the curbside model into play. So we used to encourage everyone to come down to the Humane Society and meet all of the pets in our care, and, you know, wait for the one that kind of spoke to them, and then have that adoption moment. But now we obviously our doors are closed to the public, so we can't offer that interaction before adoption. So we're using, you know, photos online and descriptions of pets. People are applying, and then we're using Zoom as a way to have a meet and greet with the pet, which is fun for our foster homes to have that opportunity to talk about the pet that they've been fostering throughout the pandemic. But you can imagine cats and most dogs have no interest in being on a Zoom call. So it's really changed the process, because now really you're not meeting the pet that you're adopting until you're actually picking them up at curbside to take them home. So there was some apprehension for our organization about whether or not people would even be interested in adopting that way. But we've had nothing but success. So, you know, it goes to show that people know the type of pets that they want, the personality and qualities. And we know the pets that we're caring for really well. And being able to match those virtually has been really successful.
Well, that's good to hear. Yeah. Because there is sort of the flip side of it too, which is that, and this is not your area of expertise by far, but there has been reports about, you know, scammers and things and people yes. selling pets online and then there's no pet and people's yes. money, people lose their money. So, I mean, in sort of in this, with that kind of crime activity, an honest broker like the Humane Society is even more important.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's why we're seeing such a demand when there is that worry out there. Of what am I getting into on Kijiji? Is it going to be a healthy puppy? Is it even a puppy at all or just a scam? Knowing that we're a trusted provider of pets makes a big difference for people looking to adopt a pet. For sure.
It's the opposite true, though, because I think to play into what you're saying, a lot of people are home now. Perhaps they were hesitant at getting a pet because they work so many long hours and, but you know, working from home, that's not an issue because you could work long hours from home and you're there at home.
Yep.
But I wonder if the opposite is true too, where people are spending so much time at home that, you know, the pet is a burden. Like they can deal with the pet from, you know, they're at the job 9 to 5, but then 5 to 9 again, you know, dealing with the pet, you can deal with the pet. And I'm wondering if that is, has been an experience too, that maybe people are getting too tired of their pets from the constant exposure. I hate to put it that way, but that was what I was curious about.
No, it definitely is a good question. I think we worry about two things. One is that pets were used to being, at the beginning of the pandemic, pets were used to being home alone all day in many cases. And all of a sudden, you know, pets are creatures of habit and all of a sudden their sort of habit and their daily routines were interrupted. And so we did at the beginning of the pandemic see some, you know, people inquiring about needing to relinquish their pet because of aggressive behaviors or, you know, children were also home all day and didn't used to be. And so if the dog was used to having a nap on its bed for 6 hours, now they've got a child jumping on them. And so there was a lot of education at the beginning about, you know, like pets need to adjust to this just as much as the rest of us. And now later into the pandemic, we're worrying about the opposite, is now the pets have become accustomed to people being home all day with them. If you got a puppy and you raised it during the pandemic, all it knows is you being home. And even our dog that we adopted when he was 3, he's 5 now, for, you know, 2 of the years we've had him, we've been home for one of them. So, you know, the adjustment for these pets once we return to life as it once was, hopefully, the adjustment is going to be the same for pets. And so we've provided and tried to be sort of the voice of education in our community about what can you do to make sure your pet is well socialized. Do they are okay with you leaving the house for 8 hours when you've left for 8 minutes previously? So, you know, and all they know is the Amazon driver that comes every other day, and right. they don't know anybody else coming over because they've never had that experience before. So we've really tried to help anytime we are adopting out a pet, or, you know, people are inquiring about different breeders and how to look for good breeders, et cetera, is also reminding them, like, this pet is a commitment for the next 15 years, 20 years, not the next 2 years, while right. life is what it is during the pandemic.
So there's going to be a piece of this, and I mean, nobody wants to predict the future at this point of time, but I mean, there's going to be a piece of this going forward where you could see demand, you know, for people wanting to, I guess, cut ties with their pets, because they you know, there is that trip. There's going to be that difficult re-socialization phase at some point when people aren't at home anymore and people aren't stopping at the stoop anymore. Like the delivery drivers you mentioned that, you know, when there's more interactivity, the pets will have an adjustment phase too.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the other piece that is really important for pet owners who are considering adopting a pet during the pandemic, is can they make the long-term commitment? You know, what the Humane Society doesn't want is, you know, a year from now when we've got puppies that are all sort of between 18 months and 2 years old, and they're, you know, no longer a desired pet in the home. And while, you know, we've talked earlier in our conversation about the forever home is not ideal, but you always want to start out with that in mind and then see where life takes you, you know. But if you're starting out thinking, I don't know how this is going to work in 2 years from now, then maybe it's, you know, take a step back and think a little bit longer. Lots of opportunities to foster pets during the pandemic, which is a great way for someone to have the experience of having a pet home with them during the pandemic, but the commitment's not there when, you know, life returns to a more normal state.
Well,
and so
only...
we've really seen like an increase in the number of people interested in fostering, which has been fantastic, because then the pets, without our volunteers and visitors coming, the shelter's a much quieter place. And so we're able to place pets out into foster home where they get all that regular home life while they're waiting for their adoption.
I was going to say the danger there is getting too attached.
That is definitely happening. So we, you know, talk about cheesy acronyms in the Humane Society world. We call that a foster win.
Oh dear, it's too cute by far. Anyway, in your experience, like even in just the setting of the Humane Society, because you have pets there at in any given time, variety of pets, I was thinking too about, you know, when all this went into lockdown, you can't explain to a dog or a cat or a budgie or something, you know, this is the way it is, because those pets at the beginning of the pandemic were used to an atmosphere where you had the volunteers coming in and taking them out and interacting with them. And then one day that's happening, and the next day you're just seeing the main staff and a handful of people. Was there a noticeable effect? Like how did the beginning of the pandemic impact the pets is what I'm wondering.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to think about when you think about the impact of the pandemic on everybody, especially because at the time as well, our staff were adjusting to that, where they, you know, used to rely on volunteers to make sure the dogs got out for a long play and walk. And so the fun part of the day was often with the volunteers for the pets. And so our team had to make those adjustments too. And so we were pretty quick to call upon our foster homes as soon as the pandemic started, and get our pets that were with us into foster home as quickly as possible. And then now we have it down to an art. The pet arrives, kind of has a couple days of intake where we do, you know, assessments of their behavior and their medical, and kind of get to know them a little bit. And then we send them to foster care where they wait for their spay neuter surgery or whatever else they need to prep for adoption. And then they just come back on their day of adoption, basically.
I want to get into the practical stuff too. And I mean, speaking of volunteers, are there volunteers currently at the Humane Society, and what's kind of like the status of that, and what precautions are they taking?
Yeah. So we did close our volunteer program for the duration of the pandemic. We had started to open it up in the summertime to a few sort of key roles to help support the team. But with the restrictions that came in just before Christmas, we had to discontinue all of our volunteer opportunities that were at the building. But what we do have is a lot of volunteers that are, you know, working from home, as they say. So certainly our foster families are all volunteers working from home, but our adoption fosters or volunteer adoption volunteers that would have normally been in the building talking to potential adopters and introducing them to animals are now working from home and doing a lot of that virtual responding by phone and email to questions about adoption. So as much as we can, we're still utilizing our volunteers. The other thing that we've used the volunteers a lot for is driving. So when a pet needs to go from our facility to the vet clinic or from our facility to another location for some reason, then our volunteers are willing to be the driver, which is something they can, you know, do alone, completely safe. And we can do curbside for all of that as well. So we've tried to really modify our volunteer roles to be safe in the pandemic.
Is I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this, but you did mention vet visits. And I know that, I mean, this is one of those things where we kind of have no universal thing with different places and how they respond. Is there a lot of difficulties there in terms of, you know, the protocols for taking a pet to one vet are not the same at another vet? You know, I guess what I'm trying to get at is there, how much confusion there is on your end when you're dealing with other partners and those COVID protocols.
Yeah. So we're really fortunate because we work with a few key partners. So we were able to sort of make sure we were aware. For the most part, all of the partners that we're working with are doing curbside vet care as well. So you drop the pet off at the curbside. It goes into the building, receives the care that it needs, and then it's back out for pickup again at the curbside. And that's what most vet clinics are doing. And so that's what we've been continuing to do. And then the vet team, wherever the pet is able to then call our team wherever they're working from home or at the Humane Society and discuss the medical care needed and move forward from there.
I mentioned it this too because I know that's easier said than done because my sister has a dog, a very large dog. He's over 100 pounds, but he has this condition where he has serious abandonment issues, so he can't be dropped off at the curb because he thinks he's being dropped off forever. And I mean there are situations like this, you know, dogs can be as peculiar as people. And this is not as easy as said and done in some cases.
Absolutely. And I experienced that with my own pets. My my cat is the most, he's like a dog. He's the most friendly cat. He loves everybody. So dropping him off at the clinic, they love him. He goes in, he entertains everybody and out he comes. And it's like any other, it's the best day for him. My dog is, he has the same. He's terrified of the vet. On a good day when I could be with him, he's terrified. And then just like you said, now I'm leaving him at a place that he's terrified. And so I worked closely with my veterinarian to come up with a plan because it's been long enough that he needed to get his regular checkup. And he needed, they trim his nails and do all those things for me. So and we worked really hard together on a strategy that we would work for him and that I was comfortable with. And so I'd encourage anybody who's sort of concerned about taking their pet to the vet during this pandemic to really talk to your vet. They're both, you're on the same team. You want the best for that, for your pet. And so talk to them about what's a strategy we can use. So in our case, we use a lot of medications to make my dog feel like it was just a really trippy dream that he was going to the vet. And that was great for him because it was quick. He was in and out and he really didn't, the next day he kind of, when he, everything had worn off, he was like, oh, I don't even know what happened. So, and that worked for me and for him. And so, but there's always, I think most vets are really keen to work with their clients to find out the best solution because pets, just like all of us, we all need to go to the doctor every once in a while and pandemic or not, it's got to happen.
And like some people, some dogs hate going to the doctor.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah.
They're all peculiar sometimes, but
yeah.
Looking back at the Humane Society too, I mean, what are some challenges to the way you guys do day-to-day things that like, how has that changed other than the lack of volunteers on site? I mean, what does day at the life of the Humane Society look like these days?
Yeah, I think our team more than two things. I think one, our team really misses the people, the community. We're a busy place. Sometimes there wasn't even parking available because community members coming in for all kinds of things, for adoption, but also for all of our community programs. We missed out on doing our summer camp with the children and youth. We have people that just come and visit because they love that opportunity to come and see the animals. Our donors would often come around Christmas time to visit and see how things are going. And so we didn't get to have any of that this year. And we've really missed the community interaction and seeing the members of the community that we're used to seeing and that busyness, right? The buzz is not there. And another thing that's, I think, unique to the Humane Society is when our staff are asked to work from home, myself included, we really miss the animals. I mean, we're all there because we love animals and most of us have pets at home, but there's a certain excitement in, seeing what animals are coming through the door and getting that chance to snuggle a kitten in your workday and hold a budgie and, play with the dog that is learning to play. And so all those things we as a team have really reflected that we all miss those opportunities. And so we've integrated in our staff meetings, like a little, meet the pet that's there with our animal care team who are working on site, not off site.
Yeah, you have your animals at home, but these are other people's animals. So
And like who wouldn't want to cuddle a kitten during the workday? So
that's right. I know that one of the things that the Humane Society has in common with other nonprofits, though, is the difficulty in raising money and getting those resources. And how is that been specifically in your case, those difficulties? Because I know the big annual gala that the Humane Society has had to be postponed. But I mean, just just generally, how is
yeah, absolutely. So like you said, the big our annual gala, which usually brings in about $120,000 for our organization, that was canceled, as well as all of our programming, which is a way, sort of social enterprise way, that we raise money for our charity, our camp programs, our, you know, after school clubs and PA day camps and things like that are all canceled as well. And so that certainly is a revenue loss for us. And so we've really, and as well, unique to our charity, we're in the middle of our capital campaign right now, raising money for our new building. And we planned for a lot of things, and a pandemic was not one of them. So, and just those delays in construction, et cetera, have all caused, you know, the cost to increase as we, the project takes longer through no fault of anybody but the pandemic. So definitely been a strain on our organization. Our team is really working hard and looking for creative ways to raise money that's outside of, so we've done some really great digital, we did a field trip for students that offered an opportunity to really showcase the work that we're doing, and we hope inspire gifts, as well as a virtual open house for the same purpose. So really working hard to keep the funds coming in. But also I think the community has been generous for those that can give. They understand how challenging this time is for everybody. And we also have seen some very generous community members, and overall a lot of generosity in the community. Because I think people understand that those that can need to in situations like this, because those that can't really, really can't. And so I've been really moved by that generosity this year as well.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you were expecting to be in the new facility by now, isn't that right?
Yes, yeah. Our original move-in was in early November. And so we did have about an 8-week delay in construction during the first lockdown period. We're fortunate that we met the requirements to continue construction during this lockdown period, and we are estimating that we'll be into the new building in early March. But even with COVID and, you know, effects of pandemic, we're looking at how do we move when we can only have limited numbers of people, when we need to move our whole business to the new facility, and doing that in a safe way with social distancing and, you know, contact surfaces. If we're passing around boxes, it adds a whole other dimension to moving. And then also just the disappointment of not being able to have, you know, grand opening events, and tours with community members that have contributed so graciously to this project. We can't reciprocate that generosity by having them into the facility and doing all the things we would have done and planned to do and were really excited to do if it hadn't been for the pandemic.
That kind of increases the pressure too, to not, I guess to catch up on that kind of stuff later and not just like let it, it's like, oh, we're here now and just we're doing the business of the Humane Society. I think one of the things we're learning from the pandemic is not to let occasions pass us by or
yes,
you know, wait, you know, the virtue of waiting, I guess, in order to hold those special occasions again, which, you know, I imagine you're hoping that there'll be some kind of ceremony at some point to mark the occasion.
Yeah, and even if it has to be, you know, an outdoor ceremony, because we were, you know, this summer there were certainly a lot more opportunities to be outdoors with in larger groups, and so hopefully by this summer we'll be able to be back at least to that point where people can walk around the outside. And for our team too, we're going from 3,000 square feet to 18,000 square feet. So our team currently is really tight space. We have to really be careful about social distancing. And so even the opportunity for our team to be a little bit more comfortable in the workspace is going to be a big change for us as well.
Mm-hmm. So there's, I mean, that's an advantage eventually, yes, too.
Yeah.
In terms of the kind of help you're looking for right now, I don't know, because you're the expert, so you tell me, but, you know, in terms of like financial help, resources, donations, people power, what kind of assistance are you looking for right now?
Yeah, so right now definitely we're wanting to finish our capital campaign. So we're about $2.3 million away from the end of our campaign, which certainly, you know, it slowed down with the impacts of the pandemic and all the uncertainty that it created. And so we're really looking for our community to, now's the time to invest in this project. If ever there was a time, we're looking to our community to invest today with us to finish out our capital campaign. And so you can visit unleashinghope.ca to learn all about that project and see pictures of the building and learn about the opportunities for donation there. we're always looking to our community for donations to what we call our highest priority. And often the highest priority is the sick or injured animal that's arriving through our door that needs needs care. And that's anything from, you know, sometimes it's a chicken with an injured leg to, you know, a rabbit, a dog, a cat. It can be any number of animals. But that's always going to be our highest priority coming through the door, is what animal needs us today. And so we often will put out appeals and tell stories about those animals in our care for community members. If they're ever interested, certainly can follow us on our social media channels and learn about kind of who's in care today. And then foster homes are, if anyone's ever interested, foster homes are really helpful, especially when we're gearing up for the spring season of kittens. Having a place where we know the animals can go and be safe and be loved for a few weeks till adoption is really reassuring for our team.
I think it's important to note that the Humane Society is not just a dog and cat only business, but you are adopting guinea pigs, rabbits, birds.
Yep. We adopted a rooster out a couple weeks ago. Yeah. So we support all animals, I think, and that is fairly unique to Guelph and Wellington County, because we are such an urban and rural community. You know, Guelph's unique that they have backyard chickens and ducks and their poultry. And so we often have those animals come into our care. So even, you know, because of that, in our brand new building, we're building a chicken coop so that when we get these chickens, that they have a space that they're comfortable to stay while they wait either to be returned to their owner, because we do find Guelph chicken owners are very dedicated and they do come and collect their pets, but or where they wait and go on to a farm sanctuary. And then we have a really robust wildlife program as well. So where we're supporting sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, particularly in the spring and summer months, we see quite a number of those animals come through our door, which we look after for about 24 hours and then transfer to licensed rehabilitation centers across the province. Again, relying on those volunteer drivers to take, you know, a litter of baby squirrels that are orphaned to somewhere where they'll have a second chance at life.
And thanks to the social media feeds, I did discover, and this was kind of a big story this time last year, the cats that were rescued from that one home, there was over 100 of them.
105 at the end, yes.
And you are still finding those homes, the good happy tales for some of those cats. That story is not over.
Yeah, we rehomed the last one just at the end of October.
Okay.
So it took almost all year, but we were just celebrating the anniversary because our team will never forget that day. It was certainly an all hands on deck, long, tiring day to get all of those cats rescued and into our care. And then a number of them took a long time to adjust to a new lifestyle. But the last one went to their home. I think it was early November the last one went. And then we've just been celebrating the anniversary and getting an incredible amount of updates from where all of those 105 cats are today. So certainly, I mean, talk about a life that changed.
I imagine that takes some adjustment, not being around 104 other cats anymore.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, Adrienne McBride, I thank you so much for all your time today, and thank you for all the good work that you and everybody at the Humane Society does. And you're right, Guelph loves its pets and loves their pet caretakers, and so we hope to see everyone in your new home, your forever home, yes, at the Antler Creek Business Park in the spring.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And once again, that was Adrienne McBride. To learn more about the Guelph Humane Society, how you can help, or how you can potentially adopt a pet of your own, you can find all that information on their website at guelphhumane.ca. You can also go to unleashhope.ca to learn about how you can support the fundraising efforts to finish construction of the Humane Society's new forever home. Sorry, I had to. And that is it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The Guelph Politicast is usually recorded at CFRU at the University Center on the University of Guelph campus. And to learn more about CFRU, go to cfru.ca.
You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, or you can download it from the host Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. When you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you will get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or at Guelph Politico. Find Guelph Politico on Facebook at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, we will see you next time.